steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And we will be hearing from Claire H. from Dublin. So please, let's give a warm welcome to Claire. Come on in, Claire.
I'm unmuted. There we go. Thank you. Thank you, Sunny, for inviting me, and Emily for running the meeting, and John, for your tech service. Look, I'm starting the timer. I think I did it wrong, but I did it wrong. Thank you, John. You're up for timing me. My name is Claire, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is September 3rd, 1977, which means I celebrated 47 years last September. And I've been asked to share on step 12, and I absolutely love step 12 because it was such a pivotal step for me. It's the step that I was put in really. When I walked back into the rooms, I've told you that my sobriety date was 77, but in 1999 is when I crashed and burned emotionally and spiritually. I hadn't had a drink in 22 years, but I also had not worked the program. I didn't have a sponsor, and I had taken a small hiatus of 20 years. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous very young, and I didn't identify. I missed the whole concept of the program. I thought this is a place where we supported each other in not drinking. You know, that, and I didn't know that not drinking was just the first, you know, just the entry point into a new way of life. But since I wasn't drinking, I thought everything was fine. And I got into trouble in Alcoholics Anonymous and left and went into therapy, and I did some good work in therapy, but then I just got into talk therapy, and it became the problem, not the solution. And you know, 20 years of using therapy to ease this pressure of untreated alcoholism is painful, painful, painful. So in 99, I have been living my life completely on self-reliance. When I had been assaulted by a member and left AA, I cut ways with God. I cut ways with God. It's like, you can't even keep me safe. I'm not talking to you. And I became what is, I just went from being a believer to an agnostic. Not that I didn't believe in God, but that I felt he had no interest in the human affairs. So if it is to be, it's up to me. And I developed that can-do attitude, and I went about doing. So in 1999, I've been doing, 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 and self-reliance as that I as I had defined it a minute ago, is the reliance on one's own powers and resources rather than those of others. Okay, so that's what I live by. If it is to be, it's up to me. Therefore, I'm not taking counsel from anyone. It may look like I'm listening to you. I am not. I am my own sense of power. And if I'm my own sense of power and I'm the only one I'm listening to, if I can't find a solution to something, there isn't one. And in 1999, I could not, I had achieved all the things that life told me, my family, people told me would create happiness for me. I had a wonderful marriage. I had a house on the hill. I had a prestigious job, or I had a good job. My husband was a tremendous provider. I had the car I always wanted to drive. I had money in the bank. I had all the things that would make me happy, but I was dying of untreated alcoholism. And so the white noise, that constant nagging, that constant critical voice, you're never going to be good enough. Nothing is going to work out for you. It's always going to be this way. was on me 24/7. And I thought, if I have everything that life in life that I thought would make me happy, and I'm in this much pain, it's time to go. It's time to go. I don't want to live. And so I was counting out pills to kill myself. And a little voice said, "Why don't you go to a meeting first?" It didn't say, "Why don't you go to 10 meetings in 10 days or 30 meetings in 30 days?" Or, you know, it just said, "Go to one." And I thought, well, I could go to one. And I went to that one meeting, and my entire life changed. My entire life. Because the meeting that I went back to, the secretary was on duty. She'd gotten there early. She'd gotten her readers. She was watching the door. And what was she doing? She was practicing our fifth tradition. Her primary purpose was to stay sober, and she was, and to seek out the still suffering alcoholic. And that day, it was me, the person with 22 years. Often it's a newcomer, but not always. And so I need to be aware that the suffering alcoholic could have a lot of time and have lost faith in the steps. So she came up to me and after the meeting and said, "You don't look so good. Are you doing okay?" I said, "No, you know, my life is so hard, and I don't have anybody to talk to, and I've been asking for a sponsor, but nobody will sponsor me, and blah, 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 whine, 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 me." And she put her hand up and she said, "Wait a minute, don't you have a lot of time?" To which I answered, "Yes, 22 years." And she said, "Well, isn't it about time you started giving something back to AA instead of sucking it dry like you have been? And if you want somebody to talk to, why don't you get here 20 minutes early or stay 20 minutes after? And if you want a sponsor, what are you doing in daytime meetings? You need to get to night meetings. That's where the sponsors are. They have jobs. And why do I see you waiting for somebody to pour you a cup of coffee? Get off your butt and pour a cup of coffee for somebody else. And why don't you stick your hand out to somebody else instead of waiting for somebody to approach you?" And all this stuff, you know, all this stuff she's just throwing at me. And she ended it by being mean and saying that there was a woman's meeting that met on Tuesday night at 6:30, Trinity Lutheran Church. She suggested I show up. And although I had a thousand thoughts to share with that woman about how dare she, the only thing that came out of my mouth that day was okay. Because at that day, at that moment, I was without a plan. And that's what started the change. That's what cracked it open. I went through the steps for the first time at 22 years away from a drink. And I went through them with a sponsor. And my perspective started to change. So, our 12 steps said, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. So, I came in agnostic. But then I was asked, in We Agnostics, what did I believe? What was going to be God, that God either is, he's either everything or he's nothing, either is or he isn't. What was my choice to be? Well, I had been brought to that point where my choice was suicide. And then I'm introduced to you and a new way of living, and your example is so shiny and bright, and you're happy. I made that decision. I made that decision to stop playing God, you know, doing God's. I'm here to do God's work, not his job, and do his work. So I started shifting, and I went through the rest of the steps, and I learned the difference between what I believed and having faith. And what I believe is things that I like, you know? And I believe that if I don't pick up a drink, I won't get drunk. I believe that, you know, that, but I also have faith in that because I have a track record that if I don't pick up a drink, I have a shot at living with some peace. I have a shot of doing things better. So I started focusing on that I was willing to believe. To step from from beliefs to the shore, as it talks about, of faith, which means I'm willing to sometimes get beaten up but keep the path. When things get crazy, when they get scary, when everything's in screaming inside me to change the way I feel, I have faith that if I don't take that action, that I can have a new result and walk through it. So then it says that we tried to carry this message to alcoholics. That's the next stanza. I try. I don't know who's going to hear me. I don't know who's going to identify with me. I don't know who is going to learn from my experience as I have learned from others. But I need to be willing to show up and try. I need to, right, you know, our 11th tradition talks about attraction rather than promotion. Is what I do, is the way I live attractive enough that somebody might want to know what I do? How come I'm so calm? How come I have a sense of ease and comfort with my life? What do I do? Is my recovery attractive? And there's a line in the book that says, if it is not attractive, if we are not having fun, if we are, you know, have not found the joy of recovery, then we'll go back to drinking. If my world is just new day, same stuff, nothing to look forward to, doldrums, why would I stay? Why would I stay? I need to put it out there. I need to be involved with people. By the time I hit that critical point in 99, I had a very big life, very social life, very busy life. By 99, it was gone. I had pushed everyone away. Everyone was gone. The therapist had agreed that there was tremendous dysfunction in my family and I didn't need to connect with them. So they're gone. You know, I have just cursory contact. I'm not involved in their life. And I work out of my home. So coworkers are gone and gone, gone, gone. The control and the self-sufficiency has pushed everybody out of my life. So if I'm going to carry this message, I have to show up. I have to show up. And I had to find out what my message is. Well, hopefully I'm sharing it today, that it's never too late. It doesn't matter if you're in the rooms and have time and think that you should be doing better than you are, or it's not going to apply. I think most of my angst today comes when I lose perspective on step two. When I don't believe that God can relieve the insanity that I live in, the obsessive thinking, the need to control, the stories I'm always telling myself, that chatter. When I lose faith in that, I need to go back and look at it and move forward. So I need to find out what my message is, and my message is service. It's service that saved me. When I was newly back in the rooms, I'd been here a little bit. My brother was arrested by the DEA for being a good farmer. And I was thrown into a world that I had no experience in. I had no experience with being arrested. I had no experience with being in jail. I had no experience with going to prison. And he was looking at all three. And I had been told by the members as I was supporting him through this, because that had been my direction, was to support him through this. And I told him that there would be AA meetings. Now he was lucky enough that he lived in LA and he could find a connection for MA. He's not an alcoholic. He wasn't an alcoholic. He didn't identify with pill takers or coke takers. He smoked pot. And he found Marijuana Anonymous. Again, carry a message. He heard people speaking his language, Tradition 5. So important that we speak the same language. He found it and he was clean by the time he entered prison, but that the meetings, I was told that the meetings in prison would be open and he would be welcome. So I kept telling him to go to meetings and he kept telling me there weren't any. And I said, yes, there are. And he said, no, they're not. And I got indignant and I told him that I put money in a can to buy books to take them to prison so there were meetings. I don't know if you notice that I'm blonde. Sometimes things go over my head. I think if I'm paying to have something happen, it should happen. But carrying the message doesn't happen if nobody is willing to show up and take that book or piece of literature or that message into the facility. We can drop cases of books off at every facility in this country, but if no one is willing to pick it up and help somebody else understand how to apply the words on the page, what have we done? It's just so much word. Because see, I'd been reading the book for those 20 years because people kept saying the answer was in there, but I could only run it against my own experience. I needed your experience. I needed your message. I needed your interpretation of what those black words meant on the white page. So, service, I made a decision to get involved in corrections work, going to prisons, being available for somebody else's family member. And up until that point, I wouldn't take a service commitment for more than 30, 6 months, because here we do 6 months in a year. Because I wasn't sure I was staying. I had so much more experience leaving AA than I did staying with it. And I didn't want to be seen as a flake. So I would only take short term. But when I started doing hospitals and institution work, corrections work, I started to drop roots in AA. Because one, they told me that it was a 2 year commitment. The one that they would, that was startling. But by then I had started to make a connection. And carrying the message in, this is my niche. This is where I was meant to give service, was to those who are incarcerated, the thrown away society. And so I do that. I have been given the opportunity to learn the difference between a convenience and a commitment through service. I have learned that when I say that I'm going to be somewhere, I be there, even if I got a better offer later. I have had trouble. This has plagued me for years that I've had trouble making commitments because what if something better comes up and I've got to do it's, you know what? First come, first serve. Get yourself where you said you'd be. Start building some integrity. If you're not drinking today, you're sober. Because that's what sobriety is. It's the absence of drinking. But if that's all you're doing, you're selling yourself short. Because recovery is where the peace of mind comes. Recovery is where the fellowship starts. The true fellowships of people who are practicing to live differently. And so I want to be an attraction of recovery, not just somebody who doesn't drink. Because when I didn't drink and had no substitute, we talk about, is there a sufficient substitute? Yes, it is the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I finally had a purpose to living, to carry this message. In working with others, the very first paragraph, first two, is the biggest promise there is. Practical experience shows us that nothing will so ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. Well, what are my other activities? Workaholism, metaphysical practices. I would get busy, if I just stay busy. But no, it's working with one-on-one. I can help when no one else can. I can secure their confidence when others fail. I remember that they are very ill. I can identify with them. When I'm in San Quentin, I am working with lifers, guys who are down for 25 to 40 to 50 years. And I may not have done what they've done, and I haven't, but I understand incomparable, inconceivable demoralization. I know what that feels like. I know what it's like to be shunned by my family for my behavior. I know what it's like to be a social pariah. I know what that feels like. And so when I go into that prison, I make eye contact. I work the room just like I do at a meeting. I go and shake hands. I ask them how they're doing. I see them. So many years I was invisible. So many years I was so on the periphery. You didn't even know I was there. I went to a conference once and they said, "Oh, is this your first time?" And I said, "No, I was here last year." And they're like, "We didn't see you." It's like, "Yeah, well, I was behind the wallpaper, you know, not wanting to get too close. I didn't know what you were going to do." Show up. Show up. Carry a message. Know what your message is to carry. And practice these principles in all our affairs. What principles? Acceptance, hope, faith, courage, honesty, patience, humility, willingness, brotherly love, forgiveness, integrity, self-discipline, service. Those have got to become meaningful to me. Those have got to become the bedrock in which change happens, and they have been. In our literature, it talks about our greater demonstration is carrying this message into our homes, our work, and our community. That's where the greatest demonstration of our recovery comes from. Not what I do here. This is where I start to learn it through watching other people, by sponsorship, by workshops, by conferences, like Sunny's at a conference, and by being involved. I have to go to enough meetings and enough events that I can grow in my understanding and effectiveness. But then I've got to take what I've learned and apply it. Because I could sit here and read this book, but if I don't tell you how I apply it, what are you doing here, Claire? You know, why'd you show up? I can read the book myself. I don't need you to read it to me. I needed people's guidance and direction. I needed to know how to do it. So through working all 12 steps, I'm reunited with my family. I have a community in which, you know, I'm socially awkward. When you're as self-absorbed as I have been and can be, social interacting is difficult because they want to talk about them. And I'm just not good with that, you know? So I learned to socially interact by my sponsor saying I had to work the room. I said, "Well, I don't have anything to say to them." They said, "We didn't ask." So she gave me a couple of small things. Now, I'm always on the lookout because it's now on my watch for the new person, for the suffering alcoholic. And my home group makes it really easy because we don't sit down for the meeting until the meeting starts. So if there's somebody sitting down, there's a good shot that they're new. And I can go up to them and say, "Hi, I'm Claire. I don't remember meeting you before. Are you new to AA or just new to the meeting?" What's their response? "No, I've been here a couple of times." It's like, "Ah, well, then I just missed you. I hope you come back again." Brief, simple. If they say, "No, I'm new." It's like, "Oh, well, would you like to meet some people?" And then I take them and I meet, you know, short. If you engage me too long, I'm going to be at a loss. But I have a few key phrases that I can say to add welcome. And my favorite position is greeter. Stand at the door. Stand at the door, look them in the eye, welcome them to the meeting, tell them where the coffee pot and the bathroom are. That way, you know, and be welcoming. There should be joy in a meeting. Have you ever walked into a meeting? I have, and I was asked to speak somewhere, and I walked into the meeting, and people were in little groups and they looked up at me, didn't recognize me, and went back to their conversation. And I just stood there. I thought, I don't feel very welcome here. So I have found that it is impossible to not be welcomed at a meeting if I am the greeter welcoming you. So I just went and started greeting people as they came in. And they're like, wow, when did we get a greeter? Like, oh, you got one today. Welcome, welcome. Coffee's over there, bathroom's down there. Useful information. And they came in and they did what they want. Nobody, whatever. And then I went up and I, because the meeting was going to start, now the meeting's going to start. And I went up and one of the guys went, wait a minute, weren't you the greeter? And I said, yes, got it, John, thanks. I said, yeah, I wasn't feeling, I have found that I can't feel unwelcomed at a meeting that I'm a greeter for. Subtle hint, but how do I put this in action? How do I stay helping the still suffering alcoholic? There are 46 people on this call. I don't know how many of you are newcomers, but I would bet that the bulk of you have some time, whatever that means. And that the suffering alcoholic in the room might be you. And so my message is that it's you, that the program of Alcoholics Anonymous still works. And it works really good when you're not drinking. When you've gone back into, yeah, I heard it said at a meeting and I just loved it. It's like the obsession to drink was removed fairly soon for me. But the desire to change the way I feel, not so much. So if your behavior, if you are suffering from that spiritual malady of self-reliance or self-obsession or self-centeredness, this is the step that will change that. This is the step that can launch you in because it says that life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish. To see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. And we know that you will not want to miss it. Frequent contacts with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. I live in a big area where there is a huge pocket of enthusiasm of AA, and it just delights me when I am off doing life. At the store, at running errands, and I run into one of us. And we make that connection. It's like, and they'll, or sometimes they'll just like, you're really familiar. And I said, oh yeah, we belong to that club that meets a couple times a week. It's like, oh yeah, that one. Yes, that's where it's from. That club that meets a couple times a week, I may have seen you at one of those meetings. Protect their anonymity and mine. But we make a connection and then my day's brighter. Maybe we'll have a 2-second conversation or a 5-minute conversation, whatever. But I'm carrying the message that I'm still sober, I'm still here, and I'm so glad you are too. Thank you for letting me share.